For decades, El Paso's skyline was marked by several iconic landmarks from the city's industrial past, the Asarco smokestacks. A new documentary from Capstone Productions offers a close-up look at some of the history, construction, and ultimately the demise earlier this year of these towering concrete structures. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Jackson Polk is a historian and documentary film producer who spent several years documenting the story of the Asarco stacks and smelter. And the first volume of his new documentary, Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter, has been released on DVD. Good morning, Jackson.
Good morning.
Great to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a couple of years, I think, but people familiar with Capstone and what you've been doing the last 15 years is producing videos about El Paso's history. And this is a story that I'm sure seems right in your wheelhouse, other than the obvious stunning visuals of what the stacks represented and their 30-second fall and demolition. What was it that led you to want to make films about this site?
It was a matter of watching the history kind of like melt away as they were going to demolish the place. And I got to thinking, nobody has ever video recorded Asarco because they never allowed cameras in there legally.
We could see it from I-10, but we couldn't get up close.
And everybody has a slag story. Oh, yes, I remember seeing the slag in 1999, etc.
Molten.
And so many people say, oh, I always wanted to go climb that smokestack. Wouldn't that be fun? So we did the best thing we could, and we got in there as soon as the bankruptcy proceedings began in earnest on the site. We got a meeting with the bankruptcy trustee and said, oh, what are you doing here for the history? He said, well, we're just going to tear the place down. If you want to come record it on your dime, bring your cameras. He'll let us in.
And this is going all the way back probably to 2008, 9, 10?
It was 2010. April, when I first got into it, we were shooting by the next month in May.
So you were several years ahead of what was coming, which we all knew. Yeah. It's such a sprawling site, what used to be there, but particularly the smokestacks, the concrete stacks, were the kinds of totems that you just thought would always be there. You had the vision to see that, no, one day they're going to be gone and to document that.
The guy said they're coming down unless somebody wants to buy them. And he, up to the last minute, he was able to still sell them to people. But as it was, I got to tell you, the first time I went in there, and it was overwhelming to me. I've been in a lot of places with a TV camera. I've been in the Oval Office. I've been with the president there. I've been a lot of places shooting video, but this just freaked me out. I'd never seen a place this big, this massive.
So just the scale of it, and how to capture it.
Huge. And I'm telling you, how do you get a wide shot of this place? How far can you back up and still see it? So that was the challenge. I mean, there was about six of us that went through with cameras the first time with two guys who knew how the place worked and how it was built. So they were explaining it to us, and they ended up being the same two guys we worked with ultimately through the whole recording sessions. But they were explaining what this place did, how it worked, and how, well, if this was an operation, you couldn't be standing here. That was the case in most places.
Right.
Most places in Asarco, you could not be standing there. And yet we knew they had people there. So we were hearing these stories about guys in these hot suits and what that would take and take out of them. And in part two, when we get to that, we're going to show more of like what is the operation,
what was the operation.
Part one is basically the history of the stacks, the idea that somebody could go climb those and tell you about it. We put cameras on a couple of guys,
right,
and they were going to go up and change the light bulbs.
So the audience gets to feel like it's climbing the stacks.
My goodness, yes. We had three cameras shooting them from the ground, but they had each had a handheld camera that they could pull out when they weren't climbing. But one guy had one running the whole time, and I said to him, I said, why don't you just do a narration of what you're seeing? By golly, he sure did.
I mean, it's fabulous.
It was fun to work with those guys because we just turned them loose.
I think there was a moment in your film where I sensed a little bit of the vertigo that you would absolutely feel if you were climbing that high.
a little bit. See, we originally had cut that with about 20 minutes of that footage. And my wife looked at it and said, get rid of that. Everybody's going to throw
me
up.
Sick, right?
Yeah, I can't deal with that. So we knocked it back considerably. However, Chuck, on the bonus material, if you really want to experience that stuff, we put the guy with the helmet cam on at the very, very top of the tall stack. He wandered around for 3 minutes climbing around up there. You want some vertigo? Go get the bonus material.
And that was, what was the height of the biggest stack?
828.
828. That's the largest man-made structure in El Paso.
Oh, yeah. And the most concrete, the biggest construction project, you know, that thing, they were pouring concrete for almost a year and a half.
That's what's fascinating, too, is that it's not just about the object and the climbing of it and the height and just the sheer magnitude, but you intersperse that footage with discussions with people who worked on the construction of it. And the fact that it's always there, you know, you can't imagine what it must have been like to actually build something that of that size, but you found people. Was it hard to find some of the folks that worked on the construction in the 60s?
Well, not really. We found a guy who was a concrete inspector, and he used to ride up in a bucket mm-hmm. every day to the 400-foot level and look around and come back down, and he told us that story. The rebar is amazing to me, though. You got to mm-hmm. realize, as you look at the pictures, we found old slides that they had taken at Asarco, and they were pictures of when the thing was just a hole in the ground. Then they filled it up with the rebar all bent just correct. Mm-hmm. Then they poured concrete all over it. And then the sticking out rebar that began the stack. And that's just fascinating to realize how much rebar is in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
168 miles of the 2-inch rebar. That's big stuff.
Yeah.
I can't even pick up a 6-foot section of that easily.
I think also what I'm sure each viewer will see something different out of your film, but for me, when you walk into the stack, the notion that you could go inside and that there's a whole other stack inside of the main stack.
It's a double stack.
It's a double stack.
We took in a professor from EPCC, and he walked and said, I had no idea there was two of them here,
yeah.
one inside the other. And it's all an engineering issue. If you have an outside enclosure for the inner stack, then the inner stack operates at the same temperature constantly, top to bottom.
Mm.
And when any air gets in there, it just roars straight out the top.
Yeah. So for viewers who are listening can visualize that if you went through the outer shell of what we saw as the stack.
60-foot diameter.
There was a few feet there and then another stack.
Here's another one. And then to find out that they built the outer one first, 3-foot thick rebar everywhere.
My goodness.
Then they turned around and started all over again on the inner stack. So anyway, that's the big stack. That's the construction of it was just amazing.
So you are the producer, writer, photographer, one of the photographers.
Right.
I presume you also are the editor of all this
footage.
Yeah. How much footage did you end up getting to make part one or volume one, the stacks?
Well, the total footage we shot over the last 3 years, and I'm not done. I was over there a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We are still video recording the site. We're past about 550 hours of video, of running video, and I don't know, maybe 8,000 or 9,000 still pictures by now. Because I lost count.
That's something, too, that you're still working on that site. You know, this, I presumed before I popped this in that the film would be mostly about the history and then the demise of the stacks. But really, that was just the halfway point. The remediation continues.
Oh, my.
It's, I know the trustee makes the case that the below ground and the remediation of the site is still ongoing for quite some time, a lot of money being spent. I'm also happy that part of your film focuses on the efforts to save the stacks.
Yes.
Because that's an important part of the history of that site as well. And our friend Robert Artovino and Jeffrey Wright and some others who created Save the Stacks. So you document some of that grassroots effort as well.
Yes. I think that they had a chance at one point. If they had put that on the bond election, I think mm-hmm. he would have seen it saved.
Interesting.
And that's where the real money would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But as it was, they missed that opportunity. And then the bankruptcy trustee gave him an extra 13 months to come up with a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what they had to do is figure out how to buy it. And that never happened, so the stacks came down. But they made a great effort. Personally, I would have liked to have seen the stacks stay up because having looked at the footage of what was up there, you could have put a restaurant up there. You could have done anything up there, you know, structural-wise, engineering-wise. But as it is, they're gone. We yeah. recorded it. That's history. It's now on a DVD.
And, of course, the center part of this film is the actual demolition and those 30 seconds of extraordinary footage, which you covered from all sorts of vantage points,
amazing
including
stuff.
Cameras. I guess you were the only ones who had cameras right at the base of these stacks as they came down.
Right. We had – well, you know, anybody could have done it, but I asked permission, and then yeah. I went after and engineered it. And I couldn't do it by myself. I got KVIA TV engineers involved. The luck of the deal was that they were just up the canyon about a half a mile, quarter,
right.
3/4 of a mile. And so it was an easy microwave shot.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up throwing a microwave a Wi-Fi hotspot over at Asarco. Not a microwave per se, but we microwaved a hotspot, meaning that we could put up to 16 cameras.
And you had a live feed on your website, elpasogold.com.
But we could have done 16 cameras. I bought one, and the engineers at KVIA would put it in, then I'd buy another one, put it in. They kept working. So I got four, I'm done. And then we scheduled them to shoot the thing when it occurred. We got one of the detonations pretty clean.
Yeah, and also the footage you had from the tip of the large stack falling, did that camera survive?
No, we didn't. We had the option to put a camera up on the top, but we couldn't figure out how to engineer it economically. The price tag was over $20,000.
Yeah.
To put solar panels up there and engineer it, you know, 6 weeks out.
You look at the billows of debris and dust coming at the cameras as these things fall in the foreground. And did any of that equipment, were you able to find it afterwards?
Oh, yeah. All the cameras survived. One of them was pretty dirty. But, I mean, those are $120 cameras. We put those out on the front line.
That's the beauty of modern technology,
yes.
Right?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we were doing live internet stuff. Like, I used to do live microwave as a TV technician.
Literally a decade ago, you couldn't have done this.
Correct. So the technology, we employed it. We did what we could. And the idea is to use the technology to record El Paso history. And that's what we're now beginning to find ourselves doing.
So this is Volume 1, the film that has just come out on DVD. Give us an update on where you are with Volume 2, which will focus more on the smelter itself.
The operations of the smelter. Mm-hmm. What we did during our tenure over there as permanent cameraman on site, pretty much, we decided one day to pretend like we were a piece of ore. You come in the front door in a railroad car, what happens to you?
Oh, how interesting.
So we went into the unloading building and saw how that place operated. Then we walked up one of those conveyor belts that goes a whole, 500 yards in the air, dumped down into a huge building where there were 14 different football-size locations for ore. So then we looked at all that. Then we got back on another conveyor belt location and went into the furnace area. And, boy, that's when it got crazy because, they did so many different things to that ore. They had a smelting process here and a reverb furnace, and then that was done. They put the material over here in this one, and I had no idea how they kept track of that stuff because you're pouring, 60 tons of molten something all over the place, and they knew where it was going. And at the end of it, it comes out in this huge machine where whole thing tilts over and pours out this molten copper. Then another big bowl hits it and dumps it in these trays, and it turns into those big slabs of copper that you see on those flatbeds. The ingots.
Yeah.
Or whatever they call them, the anodes.
Right.
Going down I-10. You see those piled up on trucks?
Yep.
Well, they used to do that here. So what we did, we looked at all that, videotaped it all old and cold. Then we got some footage of the thing actually operating. The DeSarco one time shot itself doing it. So we got that footage, broadcast camera, and we interspersed it. But we also got we were going through, picking up stuff. We were saying, hey, there's a future museum. Can we have this or that? Signs on the wall. We got the control panel for that big anode furnace copper pouring machine. And we've already displayed it once at the History Museum. Next time there's a permanent museum going to happen, here it comes. We're going to put that – we have stuff for the museum is a good part.
That's just fantastic. I'm so happy that you had the forethought to document all of this before it was gone because now we have the legacy of your footage to remind us of what was there. Jackson, it's always great to see you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
I've been discussing Capstone Productions' new video series about the history and demise of the ASARCO smelter with producer and writer Jackson Polk. The DVD, Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter, Volume 1, The Stacks, is available at elpasogold.com and focuses on the history, construction, and demolition of the landmark smokestacks. An upcoming second volume in the series will focus on the history and legacy of the smelter operation itself. A final program note, the Film Salon will present the 1944 Preston Sturges comedy, The Miracle of Morgan's Creek, starring Eddie Bracken, Betty Hutton, and William Demarest tonight at 7:30 p.m. The Film Salon meets at Trinity First United Methodist Church, located at 801 North Mesa, and all screenings are free of charge. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.